Good afternoon. Calling State Affairs to order at 3:03 p.m. Tuesday, April 6, 2021, in the Max Grunberg Room of the Alaska Capitol. Present today, from my left to my right, Representatives Tarr, Kaufman, Eastman, Story, Klayman, and myself, Chair Kreis Tompkins. Representative Vance is excused today, and appreciate her giving us the heads up. And with six members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Sophia, who is online with House Records, and our LIO moderator, Tom, in the back of the room for facilitating today's meeting. And we have two items on the agenda, both of which are second hearings. The first is House Bill 63, the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. And the second is a CS for House Bill 137 relating to DMV offices. And in House Bill 63, in our first hearing, we had a bill introduction from the sponsoring office, from Mr. Crocker, as well as Speaker Stutz. And today we have public testimony scheduled, as well as the opportunity for committee members to ask additional questions they might have for the sponsor, as well as the agency. We have Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner for DOT, online. And we aren't going to take up amendments today, and the reason being that I know some members, Representative Kaufman, for example, as well as myself, are working with the bill sponsor on different ideas and concepts. So we will stay in touch with the committee as things progress, but we may ultimately look to adopt a committee substitute and or potentially offer amendments on that CS to ensure that everybody has the ability to propose ideas that they think should be considered. So we will stay in touch with the committee as that unfolds, but it's my hope that by next week that we can take some decisive action on House Bill 63. So for House Bill 63, I think what I'm going to do, I was going to go to public testimony initially, but public might still be filtering on. I only see one member of the public online right now, so maybe open it up to the committee to see if there are questions on the bill for the sponsor or the agency. And we have, as I mentioned, Deputy Commissioner Carpenter online. Questions from the committee. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Kreis Tompkins. For the record, Rep. Story. My question today has to do with if this bill was adopted, when it would be most effective going into effect. I had thought about doing an amendment about changing the date to July 1st of this year, because it's my opinion that we need to get moving as quickly as possible on a plan, which will save us money in the long run. And then I also thought, should it say effective immediately upon signing rather than a date of July 1st of 2021? Again, my idea is, I've heard the MTAB board has really not been meeting, the current advisory board, and looking at the plans. And as you all know, we need to be moving as quickly as possible in making sure we've got reliable service, and we've got the report from the Reshaping Ferry Group. And this bill before us is basically what they have looked at for a Marine Operations Board. And so my question really is, and I'm not sure if it would be the bill sponsor or any of our DOT staff we have online, is in order to move forward as effectively as possible in getting the system the direction it needs to run reliable, and all those other things we're striving for, I would appreciate a thought on July 1st, 2021, or effective immediately.
Let's maybe start with Mr. Crocker from the sponsor's office. We can also see if the agency foresees any implications to an earlier effective date.
For the record, Kerry Crocker, staff to Representative Stutz, through the chair, Representative Story. I actually think the department would best answer that. You know, they're going to know the effects of this much better than I would if we change that effective date. to July. You know, they're going to have to coordinate that. You know, I think the sooner the better, but I think the department's in a better position to answer that question.
Let's go to the department online. Both Deputy Commissioner Carpenter as well as Andy Mills, Special Assistant. Mr. Carpenter, Mr. Mills, do you have an answer to Rep. Story's question whether any of the effective dates she discussed would whether the agency would have a position?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Our bill, or the governor's bill, has an immediate effective date. I believe, and I think we're all, you know, policy-wise supporting this conceptually and as soon as possible on, you know, getting this in place, I think is the best for everyone.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Story?
Through the chair, a little bit more detail. How do you see that being implemented if it was effective immediately going forward?
Through the chair, Representative Story, how it would be implemented, I'm not sure. I mean, it would take time to establish board members and get them seated on the board and getting the board, you know, convened and, you know, all the necessary steps to, you know, effectively operate in place. So I guess that's my point. The sooner the better as far as establishment and getting board members, getting them, you know, understanding of their mission, et cetera. And as you said, you know, reliability is a huge issue right now with the system, and it's something we're very concerned about. And I would assume the sooner this board can convene and take action, the better.
Thank you.
Representative Clayman.
This is for Mr. Carpenter. I understand there's also a governor's bill that isn't identical to this. What's the department's position on this particular bill?
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, as I kind of mentioned earlier, conceptually, we're fully supportive. I think we're all aligned on the policy goals that came out of the reshaping work group. We have a few minor things that I think we're willing to work with the sponsor and everybody on to iron out. Most notably, I think there's been identification of potential that was identified by Department of Law and Ledge Legal as a separation of powers issue in regard to appointment of board members. But we're willing to work with whomever to make that a legal and effective situation.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you're able to iron out those questions, as it sounds like this would be one that the administration can support. This is for Mr. Carpenter also.
I'm sorry, Representative Clayman.
It sounds like if you can iron out those questions or those concerns with the current status of the bill, then it's this with those ironed out, the administration is likely to support this.
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, again, we're supportive conceptually of the policy direction of this. I can't say the final product, whether we would support it. We'd have to see it as it is passed by the legislature, but we are definitely supportive of this new board and the actions that they would take.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Christ-Tompkins. My question has to do with the members on the board and looking to see, and I'd be interested in the department's thoughts on this, really want the board to be seen as a decision-making board and that it can continue on through administration changes, give it the stability the system needs. And on the current bill that we're looking at, we've got the head of the Division of Marine Transportation as sitting on the board and advising the commissioner. Do you feel that position has enough and that the current governor, whoever that may be, would take this board, I mean, does it have enough teeth in it that this board will have the authority it needs to make implementations and that be long-lasting? I'm concerned about that.
Through the chair, Representative Story, that's a great observation. You know, the governor's bill appoints allows the commissioner to designate a person from DOT. I would envision actually the deputy commissioner being on the board. And to me, I've kind of said this a few times, is that, you know, an advisory board provides advisory services to an agency, whereas if the board actually has a member of the agency on it, a high-level member for that matter from the agency, and works, the board is working together with the agency on direction, to me that gives it considerable teeth. Speaking from my own experience, if I'm on the board, interacting with board members, making decisions together, the agency is going to take it very seriously. Whereas if it's, if there's no DOT representation, I think that then becomes more of an advisory board that is, okay, thanks for your opinion, but we're going to operate this way, if you will. So I believe that gives it a lot of teeth as far as a head of a marine transportation versus, you know, that could easily be the deputy commissioner as well. So I think maybe it's just a wording. Maybe we could work on a wording change that we all are happy with. I don't know.
Thank you.
Mr. Crocker.
Through the chair, Kerry Crocker, staff to Representative Stutz. I just want to touch on that. That is something that, you know, we're interested in talking to the department about and maybe changing in our bill or seeing what would work for the department. So I just want to touch on that real quick.
I'm actually just going to pile on here. And Mr. Carpenter, does the agency have a position on the public corporation concept, say, similar to what was introduced by Representative Stutz in the previous legislature?
Mr. Chairman, difficult question. You know, I think the reshaping work group had discussed many different structures for that could be implemented. The corporate model was certainly looked at. There were obvious benefits to it, but at the same time, downsides. I think our angle is that the intermodal transportation aspects of having Marine Highway under DOT are fairly important, along with all the administrative functions that the agency provides the system. That if it went to a corporate model, all of those administrative functions would be essentially need to be duplicated. And we're talking about a serious support from everything from accounting to procurement to HR to, you know, et cetera. Our program development section that handles our STIP and all our federal money, there's considerable resources and functions that support AMHS that would need to be duplicated somehow or I don't know, RSA, contractual agreements of some sort. I don't know. It would be challenging, and I'm not sure the benefits are there, not to mention a considerable larger lift, if you will, from a reorganization purpose. And, you know, most corporate models also, they try to, I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you.
Sounds like it's complicated. Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to the deputy commissioner. Been as part of looking at all this and trying to consider what a well-designed board would be to adequately interface and what the competencies and responsibilities would be in all that. Taking a look at the organizational chart for the ferry system, and I was looking for the position of what in my experience would be called the quality manager, it's sometimes it's a risk management or integrity management but basically the person that assures that the processes are up and running and they are also continuously being improved upon. Typically, that person reports quite high in the organizational chain because you get the best benefit from that position if it's reporting at or very close to the top. I couldn't find that position in the ferry system. Do you know of that person? Are they buried somewhere in the organization?
Through the chair, Representative Kaufman, great question, actually. And one of the recommendations of the reshaping work group was this, I guess they were sort of a change management team. And it was advised that at least at their level was a three-person team that would come into the agency, into Marine Highway, and facilitate the changes of the board and work with the, you know, the operational people to basically do just what you're saying, to report to a higher level, and make sure things are actually being accomplished. And we as an agency are looking at least, probably not three, but at least one position to do just that, that would report to the commissioner office level, and make sure change is happening and et cetera, like you explained.
Follow-up.
Thank you. Follow-up. Through the chair. Yeah, that sounds like a very good addition. But what we want to do is be sure that the board is enabled to help support that. So that's part of the things that we've been looking at. Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And to follow up on that, now, change management kind of sounds somewhat similar to transition, and I just wanted to know, is the vision that you're working on currently, is that for a change management team that's going to exist for a period of time, or is that for a permanent position?
Through the Sheriffs of Eastman, that's a good question. I don't know if it would be a long-term non-perm or a permanent position, and that maybe is something the board could determine down the road. I do envision the person interfacing quite intimately with the board and making sure communications between Marine Highway, between the commissioner's office, between the board are clear and understood. And as the system does transition or change, that I guess that would be determined in the future whether that position is still needed.
Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? Oh, Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Yeah, through the chair to the deputy commissioner. Yeah, I want to reinforce that the position I was saying I was looking for, that's a permanent position. I can't think of any organization managing the operational risk, the high consequence of failure that a ferry system operating in waters such as Alaska has, that would go into that endeavor without having somebody, a fully staffed, funded, capable position very high in the top of the organization that's looking at optimizing the organization on a continuous basis and trying to drive improvement with the full support of upper management. That's really what it takes. Oil companies, which I have a great deal of experience with, they deal with tremendous risk, and they have staff that works very hard to ensure that nothing happens. Even at that, often things happen, and so I just want to stress that we really need quality, integrity, risk management, all of that rolled up in a very effective position. That's a part of the steady state operation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kaufman. I think at this point, looks like there have been some additional folks who have trickled in online, so I'm going to pivot over to public testimony, and at this point I will open public testimony. We'll go south to north. Melina Marvin in Petersburg. Ms. Marvin, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony in 3 or less minutes.
Greetings, members of the State Affairs Committee. This is Melina Marvin of Petersburg. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
I wanted to urge you to support House Bill 63. I believe diversity is the spice of life and makes for a good public board. So I like how 63 allows the legislature to appoint a portion of board seats, not just the governor. In addition to ensuring the board represents all of our diverse communities around the state, this provision differentiates HB 63 from SB 103 in an important way. It buttresses the new board against changes in the political winds as governors come and go. Staying on course with planning is crucial to a successful next generation of AMHS. I think Alaskans are far too busy with fishing, camping, and living to spend time in board meetings, slapping their gums just for fun. So I also like how HB 63 directs the DOT commissioner to incorporate the recommendations of the operations board into long-term DOT planning. This further stabilizes AMHS and ensures that we won't reverse course with each political appointee. To succeed, the board must be able to shape long-term planning, not just talk about it. And I think, just to cut into my own testimony, having a DOT, I'm understanding the talk so far, having a DOT staff member on the board is not the same as giving the board the power to make recommendations that have to be implemented. While I don't agree with how the current governor has managed AMHS, he has highlighted the unfortunate fact that under current statute, a single politician has the ability to unilaterally sink the ship without ever having ridden it. That is not in keeping with the kind of locally driven policymaking this governor says he values and most Alaskans agree should be a hallmark of our society. I would like to see us work with our D.C. delegation to invest in an innovative, climate-friendly fleet for the coming half-century. Our old girls did us proud, but if we invest well, our Blue Canoes 2.0 will do us prouder. As a small business owner and a fishing family here in Petersburg, I ask you to do right by our community's kids, sports teams, local businesses, visitors, and people seeking medical care. We need an affordable and dependable marine highway in coastal Alaska. Our community does our part to harvest the waters and keep our waterfronts working. We need you to do your part and help keep our waterfronts connected. Transportation has long been the linchpin of economic opportunity and trade. Let's move HB 63 and keep it that way around here. Thanks so much for hearing my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Marvin. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move north to Juneau. Shannon Nye, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony in 3 or less minutes.
Hello, my name is Shannon Nye, and I am speaking on behalf of myself and in support of HB 63. And the main point that I would like to make is that I think that on this committee and in the support of, there needs to be active licensed marine engineer employees, active licensed people that that work on the ships, to be involved in these committees because they see things from a perspective that other people don't see. The shoreside people don't see, deputy commissioners don't see, the governor maybe has never ridden the boat, the one lady said, has never ridden the ship. You know, we need people that know the ships and that are actively engaged in fuel consumption, in things involving deck quarters, things involving overhauls, and that see the numbers, know the problems, and that they can be engaged in the support of marine highways. So I would like to suggest that there are active employees as licensed engineers be a part of the committees and part of the future of the designs and furthering marine highway. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nye. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to Shannon Adamson, also in Juneau. If you can hear us, please put yourself on record and proceed with your testimony in 3 or less minutes.
Hello, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Shannon Adamson. I am the Alaska Regional Representative for Masters Mason Pilots. We represent the licensed deck officers with the Marine Highway System. I also sailed with AMHS as a licensed deck officer for 7 years. and I currently serve on MTAB, the Marine Transportation Advisory Board, and Southeast Conference's AMHS Reform Steering Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on HB 63. MMP stands in support of Speaker Stute's bill to restructure due to a couple of reasons. In HB 63, the board is appointed by more than just the governor, so it has a larger amount of diversity as opposed to the current MTAB board and the governor's restructure bills. We believe this diversity will help level the political playing field and isolate AMHS from some of the political infighting. HB 63 also creates language that requires the Department of Transportation to incorporate the new board's long and short-term plans, which would help the board work with the existing management to create better solutions for AMHS's future. As a current member of MTAB, I believe this last one is invaluable. MTAB currently makes recommendations that are rarely followed through with. And then just to wrap up, every report that has been written for AMHS in the last 10 years has recommended a change in its management structure. We believe this bill starts that progress, and we look forward to that change. Thank you for your time and consideration and the opportunity to testify.
Questions from the committee? Ms. Adamson, I have a question. Can you give an example or two of recommendations MTAB has made to DOT or to AMHS that have not been followed up on or executed?
Actually, one of the easiest ones that I can think of off the top of my head would be the dynamic pricing model. Marine Transportation Advisory Board recommended dynamic pricing off the top of my head approximately 5 years ago in a very different form than AMHS actually utilized. The dynamic pricing that we recommended did increase fares when we got closer to sailing, but they also seriously decreased fares when the boats were not full. So we were hoping that since the boats cost the same amount of money to move from point A to point B, whether it's empty or full, the dynamic pricing would help fill those boats. That's the example that comes off the top of my head right now.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, we'll move north to Nancy Bird in Cordova. If you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony in 3 or less minutes.
Thank you. My name is Nancy Bird. I'm speaking for myself from my home in Cordova. I strongly support HB 63 and do not support the governor's bill. This new operations board for our marine highway system is desperately needed to do long-term planning. The appointments of members must be as nonpartisan as possible. The past 5 years in particular have demonstrated the dramatic negative side of operating the Alaska Marine Highway System by political whims. I call your attention to the letters of support you've received regarding this bill and do not want to waste your time in restating points of support, particularly that have already been made today. Please move forward quickly to adopt HB 63 and make it effective immediately after passage. Thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Ms. Bird, for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none and seeing no one in the room, and no further testifiers online, I'm going to close public testimony at this time. Are there any remaining questions from the committee for the sponsor of the agency on House Bill 63? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Just a question about Section 8 of the bill dealing with the plan being developed and approval of the plan. I'm just trying to get an idea. What is the legal significance of each component of the plan being approved on page 4, line 7 of the bill? Once it's approved, what does that mean? Is there a legal obligation to follow it, or can you get thrown into a trash can at that point? Can you enlighten us, please?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I don't believe there is any legal obligation for the department to follow the plan. I mean, as you know, we have an advisory committee exist today where the plan, their recommendations are not necessarily followed. So, you know, I guess it's our hope that if we had a board structured in such a manner that we're proposing, that the department would be more inclined to follow those recommendations.
Thank you.
Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, to the committee, one of the ideas that is possible is that the board could issue a corrective action notice, and that notice could, you know, it could be routed in different ways, But that would provide notification that, hey, there's a serious problem here that requires corrective action. And even if there's not a direct, like, authority mechanism there, there would still be the public and legislative awareness that, so there's different ways that we can craft levers that would create awareness that there was a problem and could help drive improvement. Thank you.
Any other, that was for public testimony, but we've since moved on, although maybe we should use a stop clock leave that for another day. Any other questions for the sponsor's office or the agency? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Just follow up on a previous question. I'm just wondering if there's a reason that we have, you know, in the bill, which really is in statute currently and maintained in the bill, this requirement for a plan to be approved, if there's really no requirement for anybody to follow it once it is approved. I mean, I don't understand why that would be there.
Mr. Crocker, feel free if you'd like to speak to that.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I don't have a good answer for you. I believe it was in the existing statute, and so we left it there.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair. This question's for the department. I'm hopeful, as many are, that this bill, or a bill for a new committee, such as the Reshaping Ferry Group advises, can pass. If it takes longer to pass, to go into effect, what is the status of the current Marine Transportation Advisory Board? Are they meeting? Are they looking at the current plans and, you know, helping the new board get ready to implement their directions that they will be given? Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation. Good question, Representative Story. The current MTAB has not been meeting. I think they've seen the legislation and are, I can say they're not, but there was interest to meet earlier this year. But as you know, this bill has probably stymied any effort on their part to convene at this point, given how it will change. That's not to say if it wasn't delayed, they might not reconvene and take action or at least discuss things to with the agency, but I can tell you that we're not meeting at the moment. They're not meeting at the moment. There was some interest until this bill, both of our, your, this HB 63 and the governor's bill were introduced. I think things are in a little bit of wait and see what happens.
Follow up?
Thank you for that information. Through the chair, who calls those meetings to order? Who has the authority to say we're going to have a meeting?
Through the chair, Representative Story, the authority would be with the director. I believe I actually don't know the answer for sure. We'll get back to you, but I believe they call the meetings and organize them.
Follow up.
Thank you. I'd like to find that out. My hope is that it can meet because I think we all know that we need to be as efficient as possible in going forward, and I think any direction from the current board would be helpful in the future board that may come out of this. So thank you.
I have a follow-up to Representative Story's question. Deputy Commissioner Carpenter, the director, that being the director of the ferry system, what position or title does director refer to?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I was referring to the chair of the board, if you will. I probably did say director. I meant the chair of the board.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions from the committee on House Bill 63? Representative Story.
I was just going to have a follow-up to the commissioner, deputy commissioner, if I may. I was just wondering, who is the current chair of the MTAB board?
Through the chair, Representative Story, that would be Robert Venables. And I did pull a statute here real quick that says meetings may be called by the chair or by a majority of the members of the board. That's currently under AS 1965-140.
Thank you for that information.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, we'll set aside House Bill 63, and my office will be in touch with members as we work to incorporate the different ideas that have been thus far forthcoming. Thank you, Mr. Crocker. Thank you as well, Deputy Commissioner Carpenter, for your time today. This takes us to the next item on today's agenda, House Bill 137. As members may recall, we adopted a committee substitute in the previous hearing, so we're working from work order B. And let's see. I believe sponsor staff just left briefly, perhaps, to fetch the sponsor. But I think what I'll do while we wait for the relevant personnel to assemble is we'll go to public testimony, which was noticed today. So for House Bill 137, I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony. And I see a handful of folks online. We'll start off with Mike Coons in Palmer. Mr. Coons, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony in 3 or fewer minutes.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Mike Coons, and I'm speaking for myself. I'll make this short and sweet. I oppose HB 137 for a really simple reason. It's not needed since finance has passed out of committee full funding for those DMVs in question. Let me be clear. DOA made a recommendation to the legislature. That recommendation was turned down. Simple, that's how government works. Thus, this bill is not needed and pure politics. I ask that the chair get Representative Vance's HB 140 heard and passed out. HB 140 would have far more immediate and helpful impact to seniors throughout the state than the time wasted on this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coons. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move next online. Nona Safra and Homer. If you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony in 3 or fewer minutes.
Good afternoon, Chairman Chris Tompkins and the committee members. I'm Nona Safra of Homer, and I support HB 137. As an advocate for seniors, veterans, and those with disabilities, I'm concerned about the continued possibility of closing state DMVs in rural Alaska, leaving many Alaskans with only privatized DMVs that charge unregulated, arbitrary convenience fees over and above the state fees. Currently, the Department of Administration is under no obligation to keep local DMVs open. As the former commissioner noted, they have the authority to close DMVs at will. That authority does not best represent any Alaskan in your district. Alaskans like me depend on you, our representatives, to represent us. Simply put, closures mean in many rural communities that compliance with statutes will cost more and it will be more difficult to do, especially those who by statute cannot use online features, those required by statute to show up in person, or cannot afford the convenience fees, as well as those who need their transactions processed faster than the 6-week turnaround for using the U.S. mail. A resident of Soldovia can now take the ferry to Homer, a cab to the DMV, and a cab back to the ferry and go home. If the state-run DMV closes, then they need to rent a car in Homer, drive to Kenai and back, and they will miss the ferry home. Or they can pay those unregulated convenience fees for the privatized DMV. I was contacted by a single parent of three who's the primary caregiver for their terminally ill parent who needs a real ID to travel outside for medical care. That's a required in-person DMV visit. If a local DMV closes, that trip becomes hundreds of miles, and it can be rough for that elder due to either weather or road conditions, and their fixed income does not have room for the convenience fees that the private DMV charge. So do they use their food budget to pay for those fees? That's not a great choice. Many Alaskans can't use online services since their homes lack an internet connection, they have broadband issues, or they don't have computers, email addresses, or credit cards to even complete an online transaction. Now, HB 137 addresses the needs of rural Alaskans whose state DMVs are an integral part of their communities. It keeps rural Alaskans from being treated differently than their urban counterparts, which would be discriminatory and unacceptable. By passing HB 137 as a nonpartisan bill, you maintain access for all constituents to meet state-mandated DMV requirements. And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Nona, for your testimony just in the three-minute window. Any questions from the committee for Ms. Safra? Seeing none, moving next in the queue to Peter McKee in Anchorage. Mr. McKee, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and present your testimony in three or fewer minutes.
Charles McKee, not Peter McKee. The line is breaking up on this end. I don't know if you can, if you're aware of that. But first of all, I'm out on bond from a charge, and you can look it up on a court view. And they had me charged with a felony B charge, reckless endangerment, but it's actually been reduced to a misdemeanor reckless endangerment charge, and only because against the weight of evidence, against my will, I have a public agent working in my behalf to write up the notice of cure and pre-filed it with Judge Nesbitt 9/20/2019. And therefore, when there wasn't a motion attached to that filing.
And Mr. McKee, I'm just going to jump in here. Are you intending to testify on House Bill 137 relating to DMV offices?
I'm leading up to it. I do not have a valid driver's license. As I told you, I'm out on bail because of the agent working on behalf of the state and quite possibly the federal court system. She left Seward to travel to Anchorage to meet up with me in a Postal Service lobby. Unbeknownst to me, she was a state employee of the Department of Corrections, and her son was incarcerated down in Seward with federal and state charges against him. So she had a multiple reason to make contact with me while I'm working on a workers' comp case, my own personal workers' comp case. So I'm operating on a valid passport out of the State Department of the United States Republic. And I'm a holder in due course with, and have been since 2017. I own the lease rights to all cap Charles S. McKee in mining and in corporate since 2017. Even that wasn't recognized in this corporate court. This is a state that's been rolled over into a corporate control by the Bar Association. So when you're talking about DMV, you're talking about interrupting the right of travel of the vassal, which is the individual man and woman duly recognized by
Mr. McKee, I'm going to ask if you can summarize or wrap up your testimony.
And that's why I turned in that paperwork that I sent down there from the Anchorage LAO. It has the notarized signature and my voter registration denial and the Department of Revenue pertaining to the permit fund, how it automatically files you for a voter registration because I didn't want to be subjugated to the corporate control venue.
Mr. McKee, thank you for your testimony. And I don't see anyone else in the queue for House Bill 137, so at this point in time, I'm going to close public testimony. And that takes the bill back before us. Representative Fields and Mr. Walsh are in the room. Are there any comments either of you would like to make before we turn to the committee for questions? Okay, so committee questions for House Bill 137, and then from there we can get into amendments. Any questions outstanding on the bill as a whole for Representative Fields? And I should add, we also have DMV staff online. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of pick up where we left off a while ago. There was discussion about how we are going to understand the word operate, which appears both in an amendment and then also in the language of the bill. So when we talk about the state operating an office, does that exclude potentially the state from using a short-term contract employee, for example? Can you bring me up to speed on that? Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Chairman. Zach Fields, House District 20. Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I don't see how the bill would prohibit the state from using, say, a temporary employee to operate a state DMV. And we can, I guess I'll just address amendments when we get to them. Short answer is no, they'd be able to operate.
Follow up on that. And is that just based on your personal intent, or is there some attorney opinion behind that? What's that based on?
Through the chair, it's how the bill was written. I don't think we've ever construed agency operations to preclude use of temporary employees, and I think temporary employees are customarily used by many agencies.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee on the bill as a whole? Seeing none, we had two amendments turned in by deadline that have been circulated to members, amendments B.1 and B.2. And at this time, we'll go ahead and take those up. An amendment B.1 is offered by me, but on behalf of the sponsor. So what I will do is offer amendment number one and allow sponsor to speak to. So I'll move amendment number one, B.1.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
There's an objection, Representative Fields and or Mr. Walsh.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Zach Fields. This amendment just clarifies that when we say operate, it does mean the department or the department in partnership with a municipal, state, or federal agency shall operate a DMV in one of these communities, making it clear that outsourcing it to a private sector entity that could raise prices or potentially fail to offer core DMV services would not be an appropriate, would not be in line with what legislative intent is, because, of course, as we've heard from testifiers and folks who have written in, the purpose is to continue offering these core public services, including some that cannot be offered by a private firm. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Questions from the committee for amendment number one? Representative Eastman.
So I'm looking at line 13 of this amendment, where it talks about an office under the section shall provide the public with all services related to motor vehicles that the office offered in the community on January 1st, 2021. And I'm just wondering, so what happens when we have a technological development and the state, you know, ceases to offer a service statewide, but we have in statute that this the DMV is going to have to keep requiring that service at these particular locations? Is that prudent?
Sure, through the chair. Again, Zach Fields, there are certain things that you can only do at a DMV, not through a private provider, and the intent of this amendment is to continue offering those, and those services that you can only do at a DMV include your first driver's license, your first initial test, renewal of a driver's license for folks over age 69, commercial driver's licenses, and reinstatement of a driver's license. I think in general, where you have a legal issue, courts don't go down the road of the absurd, and, you know, I think the intent here is pretty clear. We want to offer core services at DMVs, and if there's a power outage, I think the court would, you know, realize, hey, there's a power outage, so that's, you know, why the computers are down, for example. Thank you.
Follow-up.
So, but that's not what the amendment says. The amendment doesn't say core services. It doesn't say services that can only be provided at DMV. It says all services. So everything optional, mandatory, core, non-core, and otherwise that currently is accessible at that location has to continue to be accessible at that location. That seems like a very poorly worded amendment.
Through the chair, these are the services that DMV offers at all, at its locations. They're consistent. And as you heard from the testifier from Homer, the purpose is to have those services be offered consistently in rural and urban communities and not discriminate against some communities because of their size.
Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, these comments, they just remind me of the entire problem I'm feeling with this, the whole thing, amended or not, is that we had a political process that addressed this. As the prior public testimony mentioned, the offices didn't get closed because of the political process. The people that represent those districts said, nope, can't do it, and the vote went accordingly in the budgeting process. What that gives is the flexibility, and you don't start to get into the weeds of having something codified that locks you into a certain thing. It's almost a Luddite concept that we need to lock in at a certain state when indeed the world is changing quickly. And I'm afraid that questions like these are, that's just a drop in the bucket compared to what's going to happen in the future. So I think we had a good process. It worked. Didn't get closed because it wasn't popular. And that is our representative process. And so I think that this is almost a solution looking for a problem, because we already had a solution for the problem and it worked, and people got interested, and our representative process said, no, we won't approve these changes, and it was voted you know, with a great deal of unanimity. That's hard to say with a mask. So I'm kind of shaking my head on this thing and just wondering if I support any amendment to any of it. Because of those reasons. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Kaufman. Through the chair, this does mirror some similar debates we've had, and I certainly applaud the chairman and Representative Wohl for making sure this was addressed in the budget process. You know, sometimes an administration will simply follow budget recommendations to their letter, and other times you may see an administration push back, and, you know, we have a leadership transition at Department of Administration, so I think moving forward with the bill is a prudent way to make sure that we keep these necessary facilities open, because, you know, budget language is a very positive step, but it simply is not as strong as a bill.
And I think we've potentially merged into comments from the committee on amendment number one. Representative Eastman, a comment?
A question.
So I'm gonna go back. So no more comments, only questions. We'll exhaust the questions, then we'll go to comments, then we'll go to vote. Question from Representative Eastman.
So I'm looking at the amendment on line 6 where it references a federal agency, and I'm trying to get a picture of what's the intent there. What sort of scenarios are we looking at where the department would be in partnership with a federal agency, for example, to accomplish one or more of these services?
Thanks. Through the chair, back when, under a previous administration, the then named Barrow DMV closed down, the community looked at a wide range of options to continue those services. So the purpose here, and broadly referencing public agencies, is to make sure if there's an opportunity to offer these, again, core services more efficiently, then, you know, that is an option to the department. I think when you look at DMV services, there is a longstanding relationship between federal statutes and state provision of services, including the Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act of 1999, the Commercial Motor Vehicle Safety Act of 1986, which relate to state oversight over CDLs. So we have this longstanding state-federal relationship, and it made sense to reference federal agencies, because I don't think we can foresee all the potential permutations of public agencies offering DMV services, because those circumstances can be different community to community. But the important thing is that the services continue.
Follow-up?
So a follow-up to that would be, I was just wondering if you've considered that the way the amendment is currently drafted, if you have a community that has, say, a state office that does 10 services, and within that community you have a federal agency that offers one service that relates to motor vehicles. The state, by my reading of the amendment, could close down the state office, and as long as that federal office remains open providing its one service, that would satisfy the all services requirement you have in the amendment. But it seems like that would be very different than what I've heard being advocated for the reason of the bill in the first place.
I think that would be sort of an absurd, through the chair, I think that would be sort of an absurd reading of the amendment. You know, offer one service, you meet the intent of the bill. I think that would clearly not be the intent of the bill.
Further questions on amendment number one? Seeing none, Representative Clayman, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
Is there further objection to amendment number one?
There is.
Representative Eastman, would you like to speak to your objection?
Yeah, so I object to the amendment. I find that it's poorly written. I think there's some intent different than what's actually on the page, and I'd love to see the intent match what's on the page so that we can send that to the body, you know, accurately reflecting that intent.
Further comments on amendment number one before we go to roll call vote? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair. My comments are, I appreciate the comments that have been made around the table. I am going to support this amendment, though, because of what I've seen with the Pioneer Home Bill that happened last session, where there was clear intent by what legislators wanted on the bill, and the department continued to move in a way that they felt was the way to go, and it took legislation to change that. And so I do know we do have a new commissioner coming with the Department of Administration, and I think this makes the intent clear. Thank you.
Any further comments? Representative Clayman.
Briefly, Mr. Chair, I would just note that in this amendment, as in virtually all the amendments we consider, we convey the sponsors of the amendment's intent to legislative legal and have them draft that consistent with legislative drafting standards and legislative drafting requirements. And I believe this actually, the language that legislative legal has provided us, gives a fairly accurate description of the sponsor's intent, which is that if there was, were challenged at some point for ambiguity, it would look to see what services were generally available at DMV offices as of the 1st of January. And look that on a statewide level, and I think this language appropriately conveys that intent. And as a person that will support this amendment, I believe this does convey that intent very effectively, and I don't find the language ambiguous.
Thank you, Representative Clayman. Further comments on amendment number one? Seeing none, if the clerk could call the roll on the motion to adopt amendment number one, work order B.1.
Representative Tarr.
Yes.
Representative Story.
Yes.
Representative Clayman.
Yes.
Representative Kaufman.
No.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Chair Chris Tompkin.
Yes.
Four yeas, two nays.
By a vote of four yeas, two nays, amendment number one, B.1, is adopted. That takes us to amendment number two. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment two.
Object.
There's an objection. Representative Eastman.
Thank you. So I see that this bill, as currently drafted, has an effective date. And that currently is that the bill would take effect immediately. And, you know, I know there's any number of bills that each of us have drafted. We might, you know, naturally want to default that bill should take place immediately because, well, it's, you know, it's our bill, it's a good idea, or so we believe. But that is not what we have chosen to do as a state. We have a statute that talks about, you know, the normal process for handling legislation. It deals with 90 days after it is passed into law. And certainly we can look at changing that if we think maybe bills should go into effect immediately, but I don't find any reason why this particular bill should deviate from the normal practice. So Absent changing the 90 days for all bills, I'd say we'd let this go the normal process. There seems to be good reasons for having a period of time for the proper and wise administration of putting laws into policy. And when you rush the process, you generally get bad policy.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. Questions for the sponsor of Amendment Number 2?
Representative, does the sponsor of the bill support Amendment Number 2?
Representative Fields.
Through the chair, no, I do not. This is an ongoing process as the administration, and having an immediate effective date conveys the legislature's intent to keep these DMVs open.
Any further questions for the amendment sponsor? Seeing none in wrap-up, and I think we'll afford you the opportunity to go last, Representative Eastman as the sponsor of the amendment. Any comments on amendment number 2 for members of the committee? I think
no wrap-up needed.
Yields to you. No wrap-up needed. And is the objection maintained, Representative
Pittman? Yes.
Will the clerk please call the roll on the motion to adopt amendment number 2B.2?
Representative Eastman.
Yes.
Representative Tarr.
No.
Representative Story.
No.
Representative Klayman.
No.
Representative Kaufman.
Yes.
Chair Chris Tompkins.
No.
2 yeas, 4 nays.
By a vote of 2 yeas and 4 nays, amendment number 2 fails to be adopted. And that takes us back to the bill, CS for HB 137, version B, as amended. And at this point, we can take up any remaining questions that are before the committee. I would add that there is a fiscal note from the Department of Administration, and online we have Sabrina Javier from Legislative Finance Division, as well as two representatives from the Department of Administration, Leslie Isaacs, the ASD, as well as Jeffrey Schmitz, the DMV director. Any questions from the committee before we go to wrap-up comments? Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, I've noticed that I have two fiscal notes with different values on them that look like they were produced the same day, time, by the same person. And there's slight differences in the documents, but a big one is difference in the monetary values. And can anybody advise how to tell the currency of one versus the other?
Let me see if the sponsor might have some insight on that, but we can also go to the division, which produced the fiscal notes. And there's indication we should go to the division. So, Mr. Schmitz or Mr. Isaacs, can you lend any clarity to what fiscal note we should be looking at per Representative Kaufman's question?
Certainly. Chair Kreis-Tompkins, this is Leslie Isaacs, ASD for the Department of Administration. We were having difficulty understanding the intent of the language and the implication of how that would affect future years. And if I'm not seeing, I was trying to pull up online the two fiscal notes that are being referenced, but I believe one had costs in the outlying years and one had those removed. Is that the correct assumption of what you're looking at?
Through the chair to Director Isaacs. Yes.
Thank you. And so what we were trying to decide is the impact of this legislation on future years, and I believe we will be submitting an amended fiscal note that will put the costs back into FY 23, 24, 25, and 26 as ongoing expenses. The reason being is that we would not, if this legislation were to be approved, we would not be able to offer this budget decrement in the future as a cost-saving measure. So therefore, we would have those costs needing to be reflected in outlying years as well, if that makes sense.
Follow-up?
Yeah, follow-up. Thank you. I guess that explains it. The one version from 22 out to 27 is zeros, and then the other from 22 to 27 is, I guess, showing a decrement of 582.5. So I guess that's it. I'm not sure, so which one is the official one at this point is the question.
Thank you, and through the chair, I would say that the one that has the 582 in the outlying years, the other adjustment that we need to make on that fiscal note is with respect to the revenue. There will be no change in the revenue associated with this legislation because the activity associated with the DMV services that is there now will continue. So what we were trying to show with the fiscal note was that we wouldn't be able to offer these savings in the future. And so it's kind of contrary, or it doesn't work well with the format of the fiscal note, if that makes sense, to show a loss in savings is what we're trying to show. So we would have to remove the revenue aspect of that fiscal note and then include the outlying expenditures for what would be the official version of the fiscal note. And hopefully that helped clarify it.
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Point of order.
I've checked with Representative Story too. I only have one fiscal note. I don't see a second fiscal note, and maybe that's just hasn't been distributed, but I'm slightly behind the eight ball here.
Through the chair, for the record, Trista Walsh, staff director of Fields. There's only one fiscal note currently posted to the system, and we've confirmed that with Legislative Finance.
Maybe it's another copy I got hold of, but what was confusing me was the same date, same rev.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I could address this issue of cost and then maybe ask Leg Finance to weigh in.
Yeah, I'll just say for the record, I've only seen one fiscal note as well, which has 582.5 in FY22.
And nothing in the prior years, and the revenue line is zero all the way across.
Yeah, so maybe we leave this for Finance Committee or future jurisdiction, but you seem to have your hands on a phantom fiscal note, Representative Kaufman, or one that we haven't seen. But just in terms of this general subject, Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Zach Fields. I want to point out the department claiming that this is going to cost money because they won't be able to close a DMV in the future is a novel way of presenting a fiscal note. Typically, the way you do a fiscal note is this going to increase or decrease costs? This bill does not increase the number of services or the amount of services offered by DMVs. Therefore, there's no net additional cost. Actually, I want to read through the positive profit turned by these DMVs. $108,000 at Delta Junction, $1.1 million at Eagle River, $33,000 in Haines, $457,000 in Homer, $162,000 in Tok, $68,000 in Valdez. Each of these DMVs is net positive for the agency. So if the department was going to provide an accurate fiscal note, it would actually show a loss of revenue. Now this is DGF. But it is simply inaccurate to claim that the department is somehow, or that this bill would somehow cost $500,000 more. It will not. And with that, I guess, Mr. Chairman, since she is the expert and I'm not, I guess I would just potentially turn to Ms. Javier for a further explanation of the per-facility cost of these DMVs.
Thank you, Representative Fields, for those comments. And, to get the legislative branch perspective on the numerics, as my Senator would say. Sabrina Javier, if you can put yourself on record, please go ahead and offer any thoughts on the fiscal impact of this legislation or your analysis of the fiscal note on record.
Hi, yes, this is Sabrina Javier with Legislative Finance. So it is I also do want to clarify that there is only, our system only has one fiscal note, and that should have a control code at the bottom right of SHSCA. So that is what I am going off of. Just quickly looking at this fiscal note, because we typically don't, legislative finance typically doesn't look at fiscal notes or review them until they reach the full finance committees. But just looking at it really quickly, by with what Representative Fields said, that's correct. This fiscal note essentially makes it look like the department is adding that 582.5 of additional designated general funds general fund program receipt authority. And again, the numbers that Representative Fields had referenced was from an ad hoc report that I had generated on behalf of the representative. Again, you know, to get more concrete numbers, I would definitely defer to the department. However, those were numbers that I pulled for FY20 revenues. But without really looking further into this, Chair Christ-Tompkins, those are all my comments for now.
Thank you, Ms. Javier. Any questions from the committee for Ms. Javier? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Kaufman.
Okay, so I guess we resolved it. So that's good.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions before we go to wrap-up comments? Seeing none, any comments on House Bill 137, CS Version B, as amended from committee members?
Well,
Representative Kaufman.
I guess I'll just fit my prior comments in here. I won't repeat all of it, but I do feel that these closures were so unpopular that they were dealt with expeditiously in our finance subcommittee. There was no support for it. There was some pretty good questions about the wisdom of it. But I hesitate to do anything that locks us in from something that may make sense in the future. On not just a fiscal but also a political sense. So governors are sensitive to politics. You know, houses of representatives are sensitive to it, and we responded to those sensitivities by voting it down. And so I hate to just, you know, I feel almost needlessly dance on the grave of our prior decision. I think we're good without this, and I'll be voting accordingly. Thank you.
Additional comments? Representative Eastman.
Yeah, I'd like to put on the record that having looked at this legislation, I can't conclude otherwise than this is a singularly terrible piece of legislation for my district. We've had a lot of growth over the last 10 years. We have more than 20,000 people in my district. We have no DMV in my district. For those who, you know, can once they make it to a highway, if they're not living on a highway, some of them have over an hour and a half drive to Palmer, which is the closest office currently. That's over 85 miles, where the state, with continued growth, might be looking at putting an office in our you know, area, which, you know, would be helpful. We have a lot of seniors. We have a lot of folks with transportation issues. Having one would be, you know, a benefit for those who, you know, who need to use it. But where that might be coming in the future without this legislation, once this bill passes, I can see that opportunity being turned off because the state isn't going to want to be handcuffed and having an office, you know, in some part of the state they don't already have one, because they got to worry about all the ones they already have. And they can't turn any of them off despite the fact that, you know, people move out of a community to the point where there's only 850 people left, and you know, however many thousands of people move out of that location where there's a current office and move to my district, for example, we won't get an office, and they still have to maintain theirs. And all the services, whether the technology would merit continuing those services or not, we're putting in statute that we're going to continue them. We have an appropriation process, and this is kind of a backdoor way of trying to handcuff future legislatures by saying that we're going to operate, an office. Future legislators should be the ones making decisions about financing and appropriations, along with whoever that future governor is. And by putting in statute, we're going to operate all these offices. We're basically telling them whether you want to or not. We want you to appropriate it, and then there's going to be discussion. Well, we don't want to appropriate it. Well, there's a statute saying we have to, which that's not the way that process is supposed to go. And so we end up with situations like we have with APOC, where we're supposed to have, 20 or so offices, and we don't. We have, two offices. But the statute says we're supposed to have 20, which is a bad way of writing law. So I'll be opposing it.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. Additional committee comment? Seeing none. A motion, Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to report committee substitute for House Bill 137, version 32-LS0650/B out of committee as amended with individual recommendations and the accompanying single fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection.
Objecting.
Oh, okay. We'll take that as an objection. There's an objection from Representative Eastman. Will the clerk please call the roll?
That said, I will withdraw the objection. We'll deal with it on the floor.
Okay. The motion passes, and House Bill 137, CS version B, as amended, is discharged from committee. I want to just reiterate that there's an amendment deadline for House Bill 106 tomorrow at 5 p.m. That's Governor's Bill, House Bill 106, for missing persons under the age of 21. And we'll have a meeting on Thursday taking up both House Bill 106 and House Bill 102 and bills previously heard. And I just want to sort of put out for the committee's consideration that I think in future weeks we may start looking at Saturdays a bit more aggressively, as well as potentially for the Tuesday and Thursday meetings. Look to go past the hour of 5 o'clock a little bit, as there's just a lot of stuff to dig into, and I want to make sure that we have adequate time to do that. So if that raises any scheduling concerns or anything else, please find me this week. That'll help inform our schedule for next week. But just wanted to put that on the committee's radar. Thank you, Sophia and Tom, and our fearless committee aide, Jeff Stepp, for facilitating today's meeting. And at 4:21 p.m., we are adjourned.